is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoop Heads Podcast. It's Mike Flinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And Jason, we are here late night on actually Tuesday morning after the Houston Rockets.
Good news, Mike.
Yeah.
Good news.
Defeated the Golden State Warriors.
Well, I was going to say the defeat of the Golden State Warriors, but it's election day tomorrow, so I don't have kids. I don't know about you. Do you have kids tomorrow?
I do.
I've got some in service all day tomorrow, Mike.
All right. Well, good for you, man. That means staying up late's not going to affect you too much. So, all right, let's dive right into the first game tonight. Bucks, Celtics. Give me your take on what you saw and what's coming next.
Here's what's coming next. Milwaukee is going to win Game 5, and the series is over, and Kyrie's leaving. There's what's going to happen next, because that team looked, I don't know. The Boston started off very strong. They seemed very together in the first quarter, and I don't know. I'm assuming, based on our previous conversations, you probably didn't catch much of the early parts of the game. Would that be correct, or am I incorrect in that statement?
No, I missed most of – I got to peek my head in on bits and pieces of the first half, but I did not get a continuous look at the first half.
So Boston looked really, really good at the start of the game. I texted you Bucks with a palm because I thought for sure the Celtics were going to sneak this game out, because just the way it started, the Bucks were Giannis was in foul trouble most of the game. Middleton was in foul trouble in the third quarter. It looked it had all the makings of NBA rigged to make this series go 2-2, because this is the only series that isn't 2-2, Mike. So I think you could have sniffed the 2-2 all four series, and like I said, the NBA's ratings are down. I don't like to play conspiracy theorists very often, but I'm just saying that the playoff ratings are down without LeBron. But it just ended up being that Giannis and company were just too much for them in the third quarter. Once again, like the series.
Well, listen. It was in the third quarter. It was and company. It was not Giannis. It was and company, because it was that last 4 minutes after Giannis picked up his fourth foul when George Hill and Connaughton kind of.
Dude, George Hill, where was this last year, man?
Seriously, I don't know. I don't know where it was, but it was there tonight, and he and Connaughton had just put together whatever that was run to end the quarter, 14-2 or 12-2. And it went from being a game that was a 2-point game either way to all of a sudden, boom, Milwaukee just hit him with that run at the end of the quarter. And then you knew at that point it was over, because Giannis was going to come back in. And then he had 17. I think he had in the fourth quarter, he had 15, I think, in the paint. And they just have no answers for what Giannis can do. I mean, he was just taking them to the hole unmercifully and dunking on their heads. And that was a very, very, very impressive performance by the Bucks.
Did you see the halftime show of the Golden State game? Or it might have been actually the postgame show of the Milwaukee game. I can't even remember, where Charles Barkley predicted that Milwaukee Bucks will be the NBA champions.
Well, good for Charles. I'm not disagreeing with him.
He also said Portland is going to be in the finals. So,
okay, well, here's what I'll say about that. I don't know that I agree with that particular statement about Portland, but, with Houston crawling their way back into the series, I think if Houston somehow beats Golden State, it opens up the lane a lot wider for everybody else who may still be left in the playoffs. I mean, I think if Golden State is sitting there in the next round, Portland's not beating them. But if Houston's sitting there, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not as confident in Houston being able to just plow through any of these other teams. So,
sorry, I apologize for getting us off course. So, do you agree? Milwaukee is going to win next game 5, and then they're going to be done.
Yes, absolutely. That series is over. Boston just has no answers. I mean, they can't contain Giannis and get out to 3-point shooters and guys that. When the bench for Milwaukee plays as well as they have in the last few games, there's no way Boston can beat them and deal with that.
Did you hear the stat that Jason Tatum is 0-for-11 from 3-point land?
I did see that. What, Tatum
he is abysmal, Mike.
He's falling off a cliff. I mean, he looks like a guy who barely even belongs in the rotation at this point. I mean, what does he do? What does he do well?
I don't know. I don't know. They were talking about how you know, Jaylen Brown's played really good defense and done a pretty good job considering, you know, obviously he's spending a lot of time guarding Giannis and guarding some, Giannis and I don't remember who else is he guarding. But anyways, I think Jaylen Brown has played exceptionally better than Jason Tatum, and it's not even close. I don't know. I mean, Jaylen Brown's not, like, I want to be clear. He's not an all-star, okay? But he has at least done what he is supposed to do. Jason Tatum may as well be Casper the Friendly Ghost, Mike. He's been terrible.
He's done nothing. Like I said, I'm not sure. You know, you look at his performance last year in the playoffs, and he kind of stepped up into that alpha dog role. And now this year, he just seems lost. I mean, he doesn't assert himself. He's not really a good defender. I'll tell you what I was struck by. I forget at what point it was in the fourth quarter, maybe with like 4 or 5 minutes to go, and Tatum somehow got switched onto Giannis, and he looked like tiny compared to Giannis. I'm like, Giannis is a giant compared to, you know, and you forget Tatum's like 6'8", you know, 225 pounds, whatever, and Giannis just made him look teeny tiny. And I just don't know what Tatum does well at this point. And you look at what Boston has. So Kyrie's been subpar in game 3 and game 4. Did not come through the way you would expect or the way you would
hope.
And
I want to be clear, Mike, what you didn't see was Kyrie looked really good in the first quarter. Like, he had 12, I think, after one. So he looked confident.
But overall, I think you'd have to say, if you're a Celtics fan, you have to be disappointed in his performance in this series so far.
Oh, I agree 100%. I agree 100%.
When you look at what his counterpart superstar has done in this series, you know, Giannis, after getting kind of stonewalled in game 1, he's just turned it on and gotten better and better and better each game. And
he scored 17 points in the fourth quarter. I mean,
yeah, it's ridiculous. And I think so Kyrie's played subpar. The supposed Gordon Hayward revitalization project was nowhere to be found.
One for five tonight, Mike. He took five shots.
He just looks so tentative, and just it's hard to imagine that what he was in Utah and what he is now. I mean, he's a shell. And again, it's understandable coming off the injury that he came off of, and it's probably going to take him until next year to get back to where he was. But at this point, he's severely underperformed what you would hope he could do as a, you know, if you're a Celtics fan.
And not to mention, Mike, they trotted out Marcus Smart. Did you see him play at all tonight?
Yeah, I saw Marcus Smart was a disaster.
Okay, he's hurt. He's obviously hurt. Like, I can't believe that they put him out there. He shot 7 shots all from 3-point land and was 1 for 7.
Yeah, what was Rozier today?
Rozier? He was 1 for 5, 0 for 3 from behind the arc.
He was pitiful. A couple of those shots were terrible
once
shots.
Once again,
too.
When your best player statistically, I mean, Kyrie did go 23-6-10, Mike. So it's not, he shot 22 shots though, so that's not really that great. Okay, but when statistically speaking, probably Al Horford and Marcus Morris are once again your best players. Marcus Morris 18-14, shot 50% from the field, Mike. That's pretty good. And Al Horford went 26-5, shot 50% from the field. So those two guys, you're probably statistically your best players in the game. You're not winning a playoff game. I'm sorry.
In the second half, what I watched, they looked disjointed. They didn't look like they were together. The help defense that they needed when Giannis would drive just wasn't there. Giannis was beating the first guy or coming off the screens and being able to split or roll, get to the rim, depending on whether he was the ball handler or the screener. And they just had no answers for him. And I don't anticipate they're going to have any answers for him in Milwaukee. And I would anticipate that next game is not going to be, it's not going to be close. I would think Milwaukee's going to probably blow him out. And then who knows with Kyrie? I know you said your prediction is he's going to leave. I think there's a pretty good chance. I saw the image of him walking down the tunnel at the end. It was eerily reminiscent of LeBron walking down the tunnel after, you know, the game against the Celtics
the
first
same
time.
Place.
The first time he left Cleveland. So I will not be surprised at all if Kyrie's in another uniform. Now where that ends up being, I don't know. I guess the most likely place is he lands with Durant in New York, but who knows?
Stay tuned for future NBA free agency podcasts.
Absolutely. Lots to look forward to this summer.
All right. So let's shift over to the arguably more crazy game, in my opinion. Just it was a great game. I have to say, this series is not disappointed at all, in my opinion. I feel like the drama, the nonsense, I just love, as much as I hate watching them whine, although I think they've tempered the whining a little bit, Mike. Do you agree?
Yeah, it's gone down a little bit. I mean, there was still some tonight, but it's not been to the same degree. I think the two games in Houston have been very, very entertaining. The first two games kind of felt like that air of inevitability that Golden State was just going to, even though they were both close games, it still just never felt like Houston was going to get them. And then these two games obviously have been a totally different story. And to James Harden's credit, I know I sent you a text after the first half of, I believe, game three, and with the, you know, some comment about playoff Harden. And since then, second half of game three,
he must have had a Russian spy intercept that text message, Mike.
Maybe something. I don't know. His trick eye spotted it from across the country. I don't know, but he's been really good. There's still moments where, I don't know, there were a couple possessions late in the game today with, like, I don't know, probably between the 5 and about 2.5 minute mark where they ended up with Harden dribble, 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 nowhere to go, and then just chuck up a terrible shot. And I still think that that's where they get in trouble. They got to have a little bit of ball movement and then get him the ball, or get him making a pass and cutting and then getting it back.
Listen, but when he passes the ball to Amon Shumpert and he blows a layup, I don't know if I'd pass him the ball either.
I understand, but it just feels like when they stagnate and they don't do anything besides just having Harden stand there and dribble and everybody else is just spotted up outside the three with no movement, it just becomes so much easier to guard. So I like it better when they have movement, or they get him in a screen, or they at least have him cut through and then come back and get the ball, because it just makes the defense move, defense adjust.
How many threes do you think Houston shot tonight?
How many did they shoot?
Yeah.
Well, I forget. At halftime, they were at, like, I think like 45% of their shots were threes. And I think they ended up making, I want to say they ended up making like 18. Is that right? Is that the number?
They made 17. How many do you think they shot?
All right. I'd say they probably shot 45.
50.
Okay. So 17 for 50, which still is not, not very good. Shot 34%. Yeah. So, but how many threes did Golden State make? Less than that, for sure.
They only made 8 and they took 33.
Yeah, so they didn't have a good night. I mean, summarized by the last possession.
Oh, my God.
I mean, you would have, if you could have drawn up, you know, you're Steve Kerr, you're a Warriors fan, you're a Cavs fan, and thinking back to the last four finals, if you'd have drawn up those two shots as the shots that would have had to go in order to tie that game up. I mean, Durant was wide open. That was stunning that he missed that first one. And then, you know, the ball caroms out, goes back to Durant, and he gives Curry the little handoff, shot fake, and then steps in just a teeny bit, and he's pretty much wide open, and he misses it too. I mean, odds of both of those shots missing, I'd say, are pretty low.
My big takeaway with Golden State is this. I don't think Klay Thompson is right. His ankle, I think he's toughening it out and he's playing, but you could just see the way he's played the last two games after injuring that ankle. He just doesn't look right, in my opinion. I don't know.
I don't think Curry. I mean, Curry has not been as good as he normally is. And, you know, we now have, 4 years of NBA championship or NBA finals runs in him, and he's never been as good in the playoffs as he's been in the regular season. He just hasn't been. And, you know, that's maybe he's 95%, maybe he's 90%, maybe he's 98%. But it just always feels like he's not quite up to the level that he plays at during the regular season. When he had his MVP year, and just this year was probably almost as good a year, arguably, as the year he won the MVP. And yet in the playoffs, it just doesn't feel like he has the same dramatic impact that he has in the regular season.
Yeah. And I want to point out, he did have 30 tonight.
He played well. He played much better tonight. I mean, it was a good bounce back game for Steph. He definitely played better than he did.
He played
the other
better,
night.
But do you know what he was doing differently? He was attacking the basket. I don't think I've seen him shoot so many twos like at the hoop. Maybe it was because psychological, after he missed the layup dunk, whatever that was, in game two or game three, he really wanted to try to make sure that he proved the point that he could make layups. But I don't know.
I think Houston's closing out on him hard too.
I mean, he still shot 14 threes, but
yeah.
I think four of them were in the last minute, though. I mean, he shot a few of those, like, in transitions where he's doing his thing where he stares it down and it didn't go in and things like that. But I don't know. He just looks off. Thompson looks off. The only person on Golden State that doesn't look off is Kevin Durant.
Durant's been phenomenal. He's been far and away their best player, and which is why it's stunning that shot didn't go in. Just based on the way he's been playing, the way he's been shooting the ball, and he's been lights out. I mean, guys can be draped all over him, and he's banging home shots. It's funny because now you look at that team, and it's hard to imagine that they were ever as good as they were when they won. You know, obviously, they won an NBA league record 73 games without him. But you look at the team now and the way they play and how much they rely on Durant scoring, especially when things get tough and things bog down. Yeah. And it's amazing that team without him was able to win 73 games. And part of that was at that time, I think their supporting cast, the bench was a lot deeper and better, and they just had more depth. And I think that enabled them to win a lot more regular season games when they didn't have to rely strictly on, you know, the death lineup and that kind of thing. So,
one more thing on Golden State. I want to say the Draymond Green that I've seen in this series is the Draymond Green that I expected to see all season, Mike.
He's played very, very well. He's been much more active. And when he plays aggressively on offense and looks to score and isn't hesitating, taking his threes and is getting to the rim, it makes a huge difference for them. And then Iguodala's been great in the series. I mean, he didn't play particularly well.
He had the worst plus minus tonight, Mike.
Yeah, he didn't play particularly well tonight, but up until tonight, he's been fantastic. He's been everything you could have ever, you know, hoped for if you're a Golden State fan going into this series.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting going forward.
Mike, I want your prediction.
So I think back when we did the preview, I said Rockets in six, and then I kind of backpedaled off of that in our last podcast and said, I don't know if I could see anybody beating Golden State. And man, it's still, whenever I watch Golden State, I still feel like there's just an avalanche waiting to pour on top of you. But the difference with Houston is that they shoot so many threes that it's sort of like, even though they don't play in any way similar styles of basketball, the fact that both teams fire up so many threes kind of keeps you away from those Golden State 15-2, you know, 12-0 runs that often bury teams.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, all these games have been close. I mean, the Rockets have probably had bigger leads throughout the games than Golden State has ever had.
Yeah. So after the four games, Golden State has scored one more point than Rockets have after four games.
I mean, it's been close games.
They're close games.
For sure. It's been an even series. I mean, Golden State played well at home and Houston has played well at their place. Oh man.
I think it's going seven games, Mike. I'm pretty sold on the fact that it's going seven.
Yeah, I think at this point I'd probably agree. I just find it hard to believe still that Golden State's gonna lose, but all right, I'm gonna flip flop once again, and I'm gonna go back and I'll say Rockets in six. I think they're gonna come and get them in game five, and then finish the job that they didn't finish last year. So I'll stick with my original prediction before the series started.
I want to be clear. I'm still rooting for the Rockets, but I'm shifting to Warriors in seven.
All right, that's fair. That's fair.
I mean, I had Warriors in six both other times, and now I'm just shifting it back one and saying Warriors in seven. I think the Warriors win game five, the Rockets win game six, and the Warriors win game seven. So we're just going to win all our games at home out. So that's what I'm going to say.
If the Rockets get this James Harden that they've had in the last game and a half, it makes it totally a different story. If they get 2016, 17, 18 playoff James Harden, then Golden State wins going away. But if you get the Harden we've gotten in the last two games,
yeah,
I like Houston's chances. They're playing hard.
All right. All right, so let's move to the other two series that have games tomorrow, I believe. So the first, we'll go with the Eastern Conference first. We're going to go with both these series are tied 2-2. We've got Philly at Toronto. It's been the tale of I don't really know what team we're going to get with Philly. Philly's like Jekyll and Hyde, and I don't know what I'm going to get. Whereas Toronto is completely relying on Kawhi Leonard, and he's been unbelievable. And I think the sad part of it all is I think that this Golden State Houston series is going to overshadow everything that Kawhi is doing. I mean, Kawhi is just ridiculous right now. I saw some stats that the points per game and the percentage he's shooting so far in the playoffs, Jordan and LeBron never did in the playoffs. I saw a tweet and I meant to send it to you, but I mean, he's getting completely overshadowed by the fact that the rest of his team is atrocious. And obviously the Houston Golden State series. I just think Kawhi's just been unbelievable.
Okay. Yes. Agreed 100%. Kawhi has been very, very, very good. But I'll go back to what I've been saying since the playoffs started. I just don't believe in the rest of Toronto's team. And I think that's been proven out pretty well in this series and even in the series before, that Lowry, I guess, has had two decent games, and then he's had two terrible games. Gasol played okay in the last game. Ibaka played pretty good in game four. Siakam was hurt, so he didn't play particularly well. Their bench is just cratered beyond description. Van Vliet can't even get off the floor, you know, can't even get on the floor. I don't know why you'd even play him at this point. And they just, it's all Kawhi. The fact that he was able to pull out that game four tells you how bad Philly was in that game, because Toronto just, I don't know.
Simmons, what? I don't get it.
Well, I mentioned it in the previous podcast, where it was striking to watch him come down the floor and drive and kind of beat his guy and then have tons and tons of space and then just give the ball up and beat his guy again and give the ball up and get into the key and give the ball up, get to 12 feet away and give the ball up. It's really, really hard to watch when you see a guy with that much physical talent and the tools that he has. And it's gotten to the point now where it's got to be almost psychological, where, come on, shoot the ball. It doesn't make sense. Yeah. So now you got Fultz, who can't shoot, couldn't shoot, and now you have Ben Simmons, who just flat out won't shoot. It's very, very odd.
Did you listen to Simmons at all today? Did you listen to his podcast?
I did listen to that
today. So he posted on his Instagram story, which is gone by now because it's 12:40 and it's a 24-hour thing. He posted the last, like, 8-minute possessions. Ben Simmons, every single time, he just brought it across half court and just threw the ball to someone else. Yeah, and he just stood there. And Bill Simmons made the argument they should have just benched him. Like, just bench him. Like, he's not doing anything. And it's a waste of a spot. He literally was just so passive. He's just passing the ball and just standing there watching. And I went and watched, like, the whole thing that Simmons has posted. And it was striking that he was literally just it was like hot potato. As soon as he got the ball across half court, he threw the ball to someone else, the closest person, and then just stood there. He didn't cut. He didn't try to post up. He didn't do anything. It was like, I don't want anything to do with this. And it was just unbelievable.
The reality is that he's got to do more on offense. There's no question. But they do need him on the floor defensively. Either he's guarding Kawhi, or even if he's not guarding Kawhi, they still, if you put TJ McConnell in there for him, I'm sorry, it's just not the same at the other end of the floor. So Simmons has got to figure out a way to do more. Obviously, he's had games where he's scored and he's done things both in the playoffs and out of the playoffs. Last year against Boston, didn't play well, really turned around kind of what the perception of him was. Because if you remember going into last year's playoffs, Embiid was out at the end of the regular season for Philly last year, and they won like 17 in a row. And I know their schedule was a little bit weak at that point, but still, it kind of became Simmons's team, and he flourished in that role. And then he ran into Boston and they defended him in a way that maybe he hadn't seen during the regular season, and he couldn't figure it out. And now you're to the point where that's how these teams are playing him, is just backing off, and he's got to figure something out. And I don't know what the answer is. I don't know how you go from a guy who is unwilling to shoot, unable to shoot. I don't even know what the answer is, but they got to figure something out because he's too talented of a guy. And when he's playing well, I always feel like he has a little bit of a swagger to him. But in that game yesterday, that swagger was nowhere to be found. It was just like he's coming, like you said, he's hot potato, just get rid of the ball. And Philly needs a good Simmons in order to be able to beat Toronto. I mean, they might be able to beat him without a good Simmons if they get the good Embiid, but who knows what, you know, Embiid might have the measles tomorrow or chicken pox or, you know,
bubonic plague. Does that still exist?
Ingrown toenail. I mean, I don't know. The guy has a million things wrong with him. I cracked up at the, I don't know where the report came from, but that he had texted Brett Brown in the middle of the night and said he hadn't been sleeping. He didn't know if he was going to play. I mean, are you kidding me?
Like, it's the playoffs, man.
Yeah. I don't, and he was not good yesterday. Whereas in game three, he was just everything that you would want.
Did he take five shots, Mike, yesterday?
I think he was like 2 for 7, I thought, but okay. I could be wrong. It just was interesting because he was so good. Like, if you are a Joel Embiid fan, game three was everything that your Joel Embiid fantasy would want him to be. He was dominant in the key, made threes, he hit his free throws, he was rebounding like a maniac, playing great defense. And then you get a game like yesterday's game four, and, you know, he just basically disappeared. Here's the thing. Even with that being said, with everything that Simmons did and with a subpar Embiid game and an unbelievable game from Kawhi.
And all of Toronto, really. That's for the best. Other than Siakam, that was probably the best game that Toronto could possibly play.
Right, and they still only won by one. Now, they did win on Philly's home floor. I get it. But I still think going forward that in two out of the three games, Philly's going to come up with enough to win two out of the next three games, even though two out of the three are in Toronto. So I'm going to stick with Philly, who I predicted before the series. I still think Philly's going to win it. I'm going to go Philly. I think Philly's going to get the next two. I know it sounds crazy because they're who knows what you're going to get, but I just don't trust the rest of Toronto's roster. I know. I mean, Kawhi could score 50, but I just don't think Lowry's going to come through. I'm just not sold on the rest of Toronto's players. Yeah. So I like Philly. And now here's the other thing. I don't think it matters because whichever one of these teams goes and plays Milwaukee, I think Milwaukee's going to run roughshod over either of these two teams, just like they're doing with Boston. Yeah. I mean, there might be some close games in this series, but I don't see either of these teams taking Milwaukee to 7 games. There's no way.
All right. So quite frankly, I can't even remember who I picked in this series, Mike, because I just don't know if I care. Because like you said, I think Milwaukee's just—they're gonna win.
I think you picked Philly, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think I picked Philly, and then I switched to Toronto. After I don't know, but anyways, I'm gonna say that this is gonna go 7 games, because both teams are consistently inconsistent. And I think one team's gonna show up for Game 5, and one team's gonna show up for Game 6, and it's gonna be opposites, and then Game 7 is going to be a crapshoot, and you don't know who's going to win. So that's what I'm going to go with. I'm going to go with Philly in 7. That's what I'm going with.
All right. So I think Philly Milwaukee would be a more entertaining series than Milwaukee Toronto.
Although part of me kind of wants to see Toronto lose in the Eastern Conference Finals again. I don't know why.
It would be sort of fun too to see how Toronto and Kawhi would defend Giannis and see if there would be any chance for Kawhi, who's arguably, if not the best, certainly in the conversation for being the best perimeter defender. And he's got the size and strength to possibly be able to deal with Giannis. So that might be kind of interesting, but I still think that a Philly-Milwaukee series would be fun. There'd be a lot of storylines. And I really don't think it matters, though, whether it's Philly or Toronto. I think Milwaukee wins that next series in 5, maybe 6 games at the most and goes on to the finals.
All right, so we're going to shift our focus to the last series. In the last series, the Nuggets in Portland. And once again, great series so far. I think all 4 games have been good. And obviously, the capped off on Friday night with the four overtime game. Sadly, I fell asleep before halftime.
I made it through that entire game, so I think it ended
I got through text at 2:07 a.m. is when I got the text message from you that that theoretical Rodney Hood dagger three.
Theoretical Rodney Hood, when he's the star of the game, then you know there's something going on that's pretty special, because I wouldn't have picked.
So because I didn't watch most of the game. And I feel terrible that I didn't, but I just wasn't going to make it till 2 o'clock. I just wasn't going to happen. But can I ask a question? I look back at the numbers. Why didn't any substitutions occur in like overtime one, two, or three?
All right. So I'm going to explain it. I mean, obviously I don't know the answer to the question, but I'm going to explain it the way I would look at it if I was coaching one of those teams. So it's obviously a critical game without question.
Game three. Yep.
And so the game goes into overtime. Right, how many double overtime games are there after you play one overtime? What's the percentage? I mean, I have no idea what it is.
I don't know.
But it's fairly low. But I'm guessing it's fairly low. So then it goes to double overtime. What's the percentage it's going to go into triple overtime? It's fairly low. So in each case, I think what the coaches are looking at is when you go into the first overtime, you're not thinking it's going to be a four overtime game. You're thinking it's going to be a one overtime game. Okay, so all my guys play an extra 5 minutes. Yeah, it's going to be tough on them, but they'll be fine. Then you get to the second overtime, and I think your thought process continues the same way. And so each of those overtimes was nip and tuck right there. It wasn't like one team took an 8-point lead and we can rest a guy for a minute or two. There's nothing to rest for. It's 5 minutes of basketball. And so if you're going to sub a guy, like how long is he going to – like how if you take Jokic out, how long is he going to sit in that five-minute overtime?
You might as well take a Jokic out. I saw the film of him in the third overtime. He looked like he belonged as an extra on The Walking Dead, Mike.
Yeah, but everybody. Everybody did. I'm not saying he wasn't exhausted, but it's just the same way, you know, you hear all the stuff about, you know, well, when Curry's on the floor, he kind of warps the floor and makes everything. And even if he's not doing anything, he's still, you have to account for him. And I think that's the way you have to look at Jokic, that when Jokic is on the floor, even if he's doing not a whole lot, which he didn't do a whole lot after regulation, but he still is on the floor and you still have to account for him. And that's why I think they left him in, because I just don't think that in a 5 minute overtime, how long are you going to rest the guy? So you're going to take him out for a minute. Is that really going to make any difference? Now, does it make a difference over the course of a four overtime game? Sure. But when you go into the first overtime, you're not thinking it's going to be a four overtime game as a coach. You're just thinking we've got to win this 5 minute period and get this game over with and get the victory. So that's my take on why I think those guys played as many minutes as they did. Once you get beyond a certain point, it's like, might as well just keep everybody out there.
Yep. All right, and then obviously Rodney Hood comes in and saves the day. Scores seven of the last nine. I did see all that because I watched the fourth overtime on replay. But I think this is once again a good series. I still don't know that. I mean, Jokic is obviously, I mean, he's played really well, and Murray's played really well. I was concerned after I thought he got injured. It was a game one that it looked like he got hurt, and it didn't look like it was going to be well for him. He hurt his knee or something, or maybe just banged knees and it didn't look good. But Jokic has been everything I thought he could be in the playoffs. Obviously, he still needs a little bit of work, and this is the first time he's really diving in here. But I think this series is going to go seven as well, Mike. You know, this is the NBA's fantastical dream, is to have three game sevens, and I think it's very likely. I'm going to say it goes seven. All right.
So I'm going to go back to, I believe it was possibly our NBA All-Star prediction show, and I talked about how much Nikola Jokic basketball I had watched at that point, which I believe I said was nothing.
Was 1 minute, because we turned around and it was on at the time.
Correct. So maybe I had watched 1 minute of Jokic, and now I'm at the point where Jokic might be, he's definitely in my top five NBA players to watch. I mean, he's just so fun because he doesn't look like the great athletes that you see all around him.
He reminds me of George Mirosan, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, he's got he's not like
he's more skilled. I'm serious, he's more skilled than George Mirosan,
but he's not that plodding. Like George Mirosan was not a good athlete. Like Jokic, if you watch Jokic's feet, like he's not moving fast, but he's always on balance.
See, he's sneaky athletic, Mike.
No, he's not sneaky athletic. He's athletic in a different sort of way. He's not jump up and touch the top of the backboard athletic. He's not win a 40-yard dash athletic, but he's athletic in that he has great size and he moves very, very well. He's very agile with his feet. He's got great hands. He's got unbelievable vision. And it's just fun to see a guy who's a different sort of player. I mean, he looks like the guy who's fixing your car down at the garage. He's got the pot belly and, you know, he's moving, but yet, man, the passes that the guy makes. And what I've been impressed by more than anything is, and this, I said this before going into the series and going into the playoffs, that I just don't know if what he does translates to being the number one player on a playoff winning team. Where can he get you a basket? Can he get you a shot when you need it in critical moments? And he's had opportunities in these first two series to get big shots, to make big plays. And he's done it. I mean, he does it maybe unconventionally. He does it at a slower pace, but he can pretty much, with his size and his nimbleness, he can pretty much get wherever he wants to go on the floor and get a good shot off or get to the foul line. He's been a complete revelation for me. Like I knew nothing about him really going into the playoffs. Like I said, I didn't watch very much Nuggets basketball, but he's just super fun to watch. I just love guys who pass the ball the way he does. And he's been great. And then Murray has been tremendous too. I mean, he's been a little bit inconsistent, but game four was like his tour de force. I mean, he made four free throws down the last 30 seconds, maybe even six in the last 40 seconds. I mean, he was just lights out. I mean, none of them even hit the rim. And he's been very, very good in the games they've won. And I don't think anybody would have thought that this is his third year, 21 years old, that he was going to be able to perform the way that he has here in the playoffs. So those two guys have just been tremendous in this series. And the fact that they were able to win that game four after losing that heartbreaking quadruple overtime game, and you know they had to be exhausted and they had to be down, and to fight that hard, to play that well and have the game go into four overtimes, and then, you know, you lose it on the road, and then you got to come back less than 48 hours later and play again and to win that game. That told me a lot about kind of the mental makeup of that team. And so it's going to be tough. I know I picked Portland before the series started because I just thought Dame was going to be the best player on the floor. And he hasn't been to this point. I mean, he's had good games. He's playing well, but he's not at that unbelievable, I'm carrying you on my back level. So I don't know. I think I predicted Portland in seven, I believe, but I think I'm going to shift that. I think I'm going to go with Denver after having watched, and I've probably watched more of this series than any other series just because all
the
going
to go seven or no,
I think it's going to go seven. I think Portland will win their, I think Denver will win game five. I think Portland will come home, and I don't see them losing the game. I don't see them losing game six at home. And then I think Denver wins it in game seven.
I'm going to stick with my Denver prediction and go seven.
All right.
So see.
And then I hope it's Houston waiting for them. Cause I think Denver and Houston would be a very, very fun and interesting clash of styles and differences in ways they play. And I think that would be a very fun series. If it's Denver and Golden State, I could see that being a four-game sweep or even a five-game series, because I just don't think Denver can match up with what Golden State can do. But I think they can deal with Houston, and so that would be a fun series. That's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping the final four is Milwaukee, Philly, and Denver, Houston. But we'll see.
We'll see. All right, just a few other side things that I want to touch on. We might as well touch on them.
Sure.
Monty Williams to the Phoenix Suns. Your take.
I have no opinion on that. I think Monty Williams, when he was in New Orleans, there was a knock on him that he wasn't, I think I read that, you know, he wasn't a very good X and O coach, and just, I don't know. Phoenix to me is it's an NBA backwater at this point, where I don't know what they have. I don't know what they are. I don't think they're going to be relevant anytime soon. I guess if they get Zion, now you put Zion, Booker, and Ayton in there, but I don't know. I just don't see it mattering that it could have been anybody hired there, and it wouldn't have mattered. I'm not excited by that franchise
at all.
Your
take on the fact that the Lakers are just drawing this nonsense out, and when they're obviously going to hire Ty Lue. Go.
All right. So the Ty Lue thing is fine. LeBron has a familiarity with Tyronn Lue. We all know that LeBron is notoriously difficult to coach. Ty Lue has already done it before. It's a fine hire if you're the Lakers. If you don't hire Ty Lue, I'm not sure who you're hiring. I think you could do, if you're the Lakers in that situation, I think you could do far, far worse than Ty Lue, just because, again, he's already understands what it is like, what's it like to coach LeBron. So I'm fine with that hire. I found something interesting that when they went to, when they flew out, I forget where they were flying, who they were flying to meet with, maybe it was with LeBron, but that Kurt Rambis and his wife, and like Kurt Rambis's wife is now like Jeannie Buss's confidant, and
did you see that Jeannie Buss and Magic had dinner the other night?
I saw the photo.
By the way, Magic Johnson, I'm so glad that you feel the need to tweet, because your tweets are gold, my man. Yeah. Your tweets are gold.
Hey, listen, Magic, I mean, it's been said by other people, and so it doesn't necessarily need to be repeated by me, but Magic just wants to be Magic. He wants to take the photo ops with Jeannie Buss and have his big smile and do all those kinds of things. He doesn't, and rightfully so. If I'm Magic Johnson, I don't know that I want to be spending 20 hours a day in a basketball office studying European players and, you know, figuring out who they should draft and scouting college teams and doing pro personnel work. Magic doesn't want to do any of that. So I can't blame him, but it's just an odd situation, the way he did it and his relationship with Jeannie Buss. And the Lakers franchise to me is just in disarray, and having LeBron there and everything that goes with him, I have no idea. You know, we've talked about it before to great lengths, and I have no idea what you could tell me the roster would be made up of any number of 12 guys come next September 1st. And I'd be like, okay, sure, I believe that. So I have no idea what they're going to do when they hire Ty Lue, whatever. I mean, it doesn't, like I said, I don't think it's a bad hire, because I think you wanted somebody who has some experience with LeBron. You bring in somebody who doesn't have that experience, and who knows what kind of combustible situation you create. So I'm okay with it if I'm a Lakers fan.
Oh boy. Oh, Mike, Kyrie's press conference after the game. Did you see his quote?
I did not see any quotes from Kyrie.
For me, the 22 shots, I should have shot 30. I'm that great of a shooter.
All right. Well, let's put it this way. If that's not going to endear him, I wouldn't think, to the Boston fans any more than he's already endeared to them. So they're done. I mean, they're done. I would be willing to put quite a bit of money up on Milwaukee that Milwaukee's going to take care of business and win that game 5. And then I would think Boston at this point, are they even sad to see Kyrie go?
I don't think so.
I know the players probably aren't.
Yeah.
But
I just saw the quote. I had to share it with us as we wrapped it up.
It's too bad because Kyrie, I mean, I've said it numerous times, but when he was here in Cleveland, I think he's a great, 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 great number two. And he was perfect for LeBron because he filled in the holes that LeBron had in his game at the end of games and be able to create shots and create offense out of nothing. But as a leader of the team, he hasn't really proven this year that he's able to do that in any kind of positive way and inspire his teammates. And so, you know, it's a learning process. I mean, he kind of grew up under LeBron, and that's tough because I'm not sure that you get many opportunities to do the things that a leader needs to do when you're the second fiddle to LeBron and everything that goes along with him. And I don't know. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens this summer and where everybody ends up. There's going to be a lot of things going on. There's a lot of guys that could be switching teams, and the balance of power could definitely shift in the league. It could look totally different. We're sitting here next year doing our NBA playoff pods. It's going to look a lot. I think the landscape of the league is going to look much, much different.
I agree.
All right. I think we have covered everything at this point. So if we have any more interesting developments this week, or if not, then we'll probably be back with a conference finals preview NBA pod at some point in the near future. So thanks for staying up with us tonight. And Jason and I are going to head off to bed shortly, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.